You are listening to KPOO San Francisco, 89.5 FM. You are listening to Reality Sandwich. I'm Julie Matthews, a certified nutrition consultant with Healthful Living, and you're listening to our Healthful Living radio show, Reality Sandwich, today. And I have with me my co-host,
Martin Matthews. I'm a certified clinical and medical hypnotherapist with Healthful Living and advocate for healthful living and the sharing of reality in our world.
And today we actually have a really, really fun set of guests. We have been listening to them for several years now and are now merging for one day the ideas of both groups and looking forward to sharing what they've been up to. And that is California Prison Focus, the show that's on right before ours. And, you know, so many times we've come in after they've been on and just found that we resonated with the information. And, you know, there's so many things in our world to be aware of and know about that we can only sort of specialize in, you know, one or two things. And so Martin and I have spent our time focusing on health and the health of the planet and health of the people and also the health of our society and community and prisons, and how we treat people is also really essential. And so we've always kind of resonated with the ideas, and now we're really excited to have them on today. So we have Charles Carbone, Brother Leonard, and Bato on today to talk about their issues and or the issues that are near and dear to them, which are prisoners' rights and all of that. So we'll open it up to them to find out more.
And we've been excited to get you guys on the show for a while. Julie's been talking about it, and we've been saying, you know, we got to get you on and really find out, you know, what's going on in your hearts, because you're doing some incredible work. I listen to your shows, and, you know, what's driving you guys, and where did this all stem from? And we've been on the site from time to time, and I just get a feeling that there's something, you know, really driving this that's tremendously important to us from a broader societal perspective, that you're serving the collective. So I'd just kind of like to hear a little bit of the background and how did all this begin. And just for anybody who's listening, of course, I know you guys have mentioned it, but your main website is prisoners.org, yes?
It's prisons, P-R-I, yeah, prisons.org. And we're really honored and happy to be here, too, and to resonate and collaborate with Reality Sandwich, because we really basically feel the same exact way that there's such an appropriate overlap between our issues and the healthful living of the planet and the people and the animals and the spirits that occupy the planet, because you know, we see a lot of tortured souls inside, and that's not just the prisoners. That's also the prison guards. It's the whole system behind it, and really the effects of neglect and not paying attention to these particular issues, the chronic and systemic problems that start just from not treating each other and treating ourselves well enough. And so we're really honored and pleased, Prison Focused, to be here and to spend this time with you today.
Great.
Yeah, well, you know, Julie and Marty, you know, I got to admit, you kind of caught me a little bit by surprise because I was already out of the studio to find out you guys really are interested in doing a show on us, because, you know, in all truth, there's really nothing that I can think of nutritious going on about the Department of Correction, you know. But yet that you have that human quality, the spirit that you're interested in, you know. But once again, it's just an overwhelming subject, the one that the prison industrial world complex, you know, and it seems like it seemed to have seen it develop, you know, for the last 30, 40 years from both inside and outside. And it's an overwhelming colossus, you know. I make fun of it, and I have joined some words together, and I go, I call it Colossosaurus X. And it's colossus. It's here in California. It's an incredible reptile, and it rules. I made that up a long time ago, and people said, well, I said, no, when you think about it, it's absolute power taking place within this segment or unsegment of society, because society has disowned that whole world as far as we're concerned, you know, and treatment and everything like that, education. It's not existence. It's a facade. It's just something that's being worded about by all the politicians, but prisoners get nothing, you know, in these times. And I do recall distantly in my memory that there was a time when there was a thing called within the prisons, every prison, you know, there was a thing called the Department of Care and Treatment, and there was an associate warden that went with care and treatment. Now that's an absurd joke. Associate warden, they want to be called that, you know. Custody rules in there, absolutely, you know. And so you can go from there and try to, you know, make sense of it any way you can, but the public does not know a lot of the things that I'm talking about because they haven't experienced that. But yet within the most powerful, the most so-called egalitarian society, the riches, you know, the far technology, is that prisoners are still living in a very primitive existence, even in this country, even though the cell, each cell in some of these security housing units, $50,000 for that cell. But it's bare. It's sterile. There's nothing there except the prisoner, and they keep them in shorts nowadays, you know, and cloth moccasins. And that's how they live. And as far as their food coming along, let me tell you, it's totally unhealthy. It's totally, totally unhealthy. So you got my take right there in short of what I think. But, yeah.
So yeah. Go ahead, Honor.
Yeah, for me, many times after our show, then I would stay a couple of minutes and listen to your introduction and just listening to what you were talking about, you know. And then this is really interesting because I get so much understanding of all the realities that comes with food. And a lot of people in the U.S., they do not really consider food as a, you know, as a holy intake into their bodies, you know. And then myself, I'm a vegetarian. And it's not that I want to impress another person, but it's out of a deep understanding for animal rights and, you know. And then also in terms of what is happening today, like all the mad cow disease, if the cows don't get mad, the birds get this kind of virus, the mosquitoes get this, and, you know. So everything is, like, basically on a collapse when you look at the total picture, you know. So when it comes to the question of food and the way that you guys presented on Reality Sandwich, then it wants me to listen because it includes just much broader than just food, you know. And for me, food is, it can be used as a tool to depress, you know, it to oppress others because in terms of the prison realities in South Africa where it concerns food, is like that is the first form of punishment that you get when you go to prison because the food is of such a nature that it is just barely to keep you alive, you know. It is organized in such a way that it can just keep you alive for that minute. And then also, the like people used to say, like, especially we as comrades, when we go to prison, the state would, like, they would play with your stomach, as we call it. They would give you X amount of food that would blow up your stomach. Next day, they would give you less. Next day, they would give you less and less until you can, you know, hardly hold it. And then the next day, suddenly, a lot of food. So food going into the body, it also has something on the psyche of the person, you know. So in terms of the, of that similarities that is there in, it's in all the prisons, you know. But in California, it is actually worse too, you know. When you look at the development of people outside and you judge it in terms of the prison conditions, then it's really worse when you judge it on the general level.
Upon a mention of Brother Leonard mentioning the cow, I sort of stole the mic away here from Barn and Julie. But when you mentioned the cow, it reminded me of an insight from years ago at San Quentin because San Quentin had a butcher shop. And I didn't work in the butcher shop, but I worked in the garbage pit, which was close by, you know. There was a relationship there going on between what got thrown away and what reached us at the garbage pit, you know, by way of the prisoners, you know. And there was a process where all the extra meat, I guess, or whatever, you know, was ground up and put into casings or molds to form them into big fat patties so they look like a big fat hamburger, okay? And it was called, once a week we had molded steak. It was molded steak. See, so I thought it was because they molded, but I realized later on is that, you know what, the meat's purple. It has a purple sheen on it when you hold it to the light, you know. And I realized what the heck I was eating, and I stopped. But otherwise, you thought you were having a heck of a molded steak there, you know. But in fact, it was moldy.
Ugh.
It was rotting. And they were feeding that. Well, this has been 30 years ago, you know. But stuff like that, as far as prisoners getting any quality food, it's like, you know, try to give you quantity of junk this, because of all the additives and stuff, and you know, and it's going to make you sick. And that is the process of long-term incarceration. You deteriorate. And the Muslims, I learned early on, the Muslim people that practice Muslim religion at San Quentin, they told me a lot about the prison keeper wants to deteriorate you so that you're easier to handle.
Right.
And he'll give you all this thing that is going to affect your mind, not only your body.
Right.
And that is a controlling factor that the Department of Corrections in this modern day is completely aware of, because prisoners right now at Pelican Bay, I got some very close friends up there. They never complain. They've been there 10, 20 years. And one of them wrote me, said, Vato, they're starving us. And he told me how they're doing it. And for him to have told me that, that they're deliberately starving them, not only fewer rations, but poor quality.
Right.
Nothing of substance that's going to get your energy up.
Yeah. Well, in our culture, we don't pay any attention to quality in any sort of institutions, whether it's hospitals, or we really have no concept of quality or how important it is to someone's health or their mind or their violence. And obviously, in prisons, people care even less, I'm sure, for having that be an important part of someone's care.
Well, and there's a significant analogy going on here between this microcosm that you just described in the whole prison system and our society as a whole, because we, as an aggregate group of Americans, are starving ourselves. We don't have any quality of our food. Our kids are starving. They're starving for intelligence. Our society is starving for quality in really all walks of life. And there are factors and forces that are perpetuating that upon us. And the term prisoner or the term slave has been used to talk about the American people being enslaved by this broader system that we're in that is not serving anyone. And the injustices, they're, you know, broadly spoken, there are parallels that are going on here. So clearly, as you know, we've come forth with this show to speak every week about various different subjects in this broader picture, and then now bring you guys into this microcosm of what it is that you're bringing forth in this work with respect to the prison system and the injustices there. And I just want to pull it back for just a quick second and kind of get down to, you know, what is it in you individually that's drives your passion, that this is an area that you have got to work towards, that you have got to share, you've got to serve in some regard? Where did that stem from, and what's driving you?
I think where it came from me was two things. One, whenever, and Bato talked a little bit about this, the abuses of power that go on, whenever there are real significant abuses of power, especially when the person who's doing the abusing thinks nobody else is watching, that is something that at a kind of a visceral level, a carnal level, has always affected me. And I think it's more pernicious or more disgusting when it's the state that is doing it. When the human rights abuses in the state of California, the worst ones are committed by the state of California. And that's being done in, you know, quote unquote, in our name and absolutely with our tax money. And so when you have the government, who should be upholding the ideals of the society and should be reflecting the best of the culture, endorsing the worst aspects of society and in a way that treats people in the most horrendous manner possible. I mean, even at the smallest level, we're talking about nutrition and food. And I know, you know, you take that as the definition of health in a very broad manner. But just even on that, it made me think of the fact that the first defense that the Department of Corrections has when it comes to underfeeding and offering basically crap processed food to the prisoners is they defend it by saying, well, this is the prescribed USDA approved limits on nutrition. So we're just following what the government is telling us when it comes. That quite literally, because as a lawyer, I've seen it in their legal papers. That's their defense, is these are the amounts that the Department of Agriculture and FDA and so forth approves of. So talk about the institutionalization of, at the societal level and at the prisoner level of things. So, yeah, I mean, I do it because I think that the worst human rights abuses are committed by the state of California. And then secondly, when I got inside, the more I knew, the more outraged I became, because the more I saw was basically people caught up, poor people, people of color caught up because of drugs or because of financial hardship and poverty, basically being criminalized as an entire class of people. And who pose no threat to public safety whatsoever. We're fine, good people who their biggest problem in life was a lack of opportunity. Mm-hmm. And that pissed me off and enraged me so much that I felt like, I had to do something about it. And once I started doing something about it, I started to see that the population I was working with was equally, if not more so, invested in the work. And that's not often the case. Sometimes, when you're working with the population, you feel like you have to kind of pull them along in the struggle. And with the prison community, it's not the case. Really, you see the prisoner will say, hey, I'm willing to give, 150% to this effort. What are you willing to give? And to work in that community, it really takes away this notion of, this great white guy coming in on a white horse, saving the people. Mm-hmm. That's not what we're doing. We're really working with and for the prisoners and taking our cues in terms of strategies and issues from the people that are the most affected by it. And I think that's another real important dimension to the work.
Mm. What is it when most people out there that are probably listening don't have somebody in prison, I'm guessing. And so I know for myself, I never really thought about it because I figured, well, I'm not one of those people. But then I started listening to your show every week and I started realizing, wow, this is just important because I'm a human and this is not really fair to do to other humans. And what should people that don't know anything about the system, what can you tell them about what's going on that's not right about the system?
Well, the first thing is the fact that we don't know about it. That's indicative of a larger problem that these public institutions that are, have very absolute control and power over people are not known to the rest of us. And these are public institutions like our public libraries or, any branch of government, and they should be transparent and we should be able to know what's happening to the people that are being affected by this. There are so many ways into this issue, whether it's your concern about human rights, whether it's looking at it from all of the racial dimensions that go on. It's a very racist and very sexist prison system and very classist prison system. It's also very wasteful. I mean, even the most fiscally conservative Republicans that I've sat down and talked with have said, damn, why are we spending, over $8 billion a year on a project here that's absolutely broken by all empirical standards? 65% of the people getting out of prison go back into the prison system within 3 years. Mm. If that was any other, if it was a corporation, right, if it was a public institution, if it was, a mom and pop store, they would have closed their doors by now because that is unsustainable. And yet because of, politicians stepping over one another to so-called be tough on crime in a bunch of empty political slogans, and really doing no service to the victims or service to justice, every person should be concerned about it, just as if we're concerned if our public library at the end of the street was going to close or, they stopped picking up trash or, this is the fabric of our society. And it's worse because it involves ripping somebody out of their community and sticking them in a place where they're utterly isolated, not only in terms of their friends and family, but in terms of some kind of meaningful opportunity or stimuli or education or vocation, whatever the case may be. They're really just being housed and counted and poorly fed. I mean, the role of the Department of Corrections today is to count you, keep you confined, and to make your quality of life as difficult as humanly possible. Mm-hmm. And, that's not the type of system of justice we need in place. And so, I just encourage people, look at it from whatever issue appeals to you, whatever speaks to you the most. That's really the point in which the bindi, if you will, the point in which everything is going to start unraveling, and you'll see the big picture quite quickly.
Mm. Yeah, for me, it's like I come from a society of prisoners, where the prisoners are heroes, you know, like Mandela, Sisulu, Mbeki, where the preacher on the corner can be a prisoner.
Mm.
The lawyer can go to prison and the doctor can get in prison, you know, where you begin to understand that prisoner rights is the same as human rights. What caused me to get involved in the prison issues is once a revolutionary, you will always remain a revolutionary. Otherwise, you have never been a revolutionary, you know. Once you're working for change on this level, you'll always find another level to work with change.
Mm.
Once you have learned something in the struggle, you can never unlearn it, you know. It's not like going to school, because struggle is a matter of survival as well. Some places, struggle is a luxury, you know. But all struggle that is really true and intense is always, you know, a struggle. That's why it's called struggle, you know. So for me, the struggle that people face in the U.S., like, because of racism, because racism is still very rife and alive, you know. Like one youth, he get 17 years for possession of a joint, you know. I guess it must be maybe a very, very thin joint also, you know. It's not like the Bob Marley spliffs, you know. So he gets 17 years for that. And then it's such a rich country, but here there is no progressive ways for a person to, when he goes to prison, there is a way that he can come out a better person.
Mm-hmm.
And secondly, what was really horrifying and backward was the death penalty.
Mm-hmm.
You know, when I come from a country where we fought it and we made people to understand, hey, the death penalty is not linked to crime. It doesn't mean if there is a death penalty, people will be deterred to, you know. So, and then also the right to life, that be included in the constitution of a country, you know, more and we stand on more than the Second Amendment right, or what is the right that these white collar robbers use, not to talk, or right to bear arms, right to this, you know. So those are the kind of contradictions that I saw in the society too, you know. And obviously you find a place where you are comfortable with the struggles that's going on. You find a place where you see, man, people need help here. You know, you find a place where you can see, even if I fold a couple of envelopes in this office, people will appreciate it.
Mm.
You find a place where you can find a senior comrade like Bato, who have been there, and he is taking you through the process, and working with him, you learn so much, you know.
Mm.
So learning and teaching becomes the same thing. So the minute you start teaching, that's also the minute you learn from Bato and Charles and whoever, and the information that you're supposed to teach to people, you know. So it's about that kind of involvement that makes the fire burn and keep you going and, you know, push up the energy.
Sure.
So as revolutionaries, what do you really feel right now is some of the main subjects that need to be impacted? I mean, what are some of the most egregious? I mean, this is because, as Julie was speaking before, you know, we're talking about inherent human rights here, and you know, if you could fix it, yeah, I know that's a pretty simplistic question. But you know, what are the core couple of bullet points that you know you are that gets you up and continues this fight every single day? Anyone?
I think we'll all give a try on this one, because it is an important issue, and it's important for us to think big on these topics. I think the first thing that we need to deal with in terms of our wish list is look at just prison as a model to solving crime or issues dealing with crime, because we can sanitize or fix the prison system, but we need to look more intelligently at just doing away with prisons as a whole, as a way of or as an instrument of change or justice or dealing with public safety issues and law and order topics. So we need to start looking at some alternatives to incarceration. And there are many ideas on the table. You know, I keep saying that There's more good ideas than dishes at a Las Vegas buffet. There's plenty of good ideas out there. It's just a matter of political will in terms of implementing those ideas. So, you know, one of the things is that's fantastic that unfortunately is underused in the state is restorative justice models, because I find, you know, I represent a lot of prisoners who've killed people, and I try to get them out of prison after they've overserved an already lengthy prison sentence. And so I see someone maybe 25 years into a sentence, and I sit across from the victim, the family of the victim, the person that's been killed, and there has been no reconciliation and restoration in that process. The family of the victim of someone who's been killed is just as pissed off, if not more, 25 years into the process. And that, to me, in such an extreme example, is indicative of the failure of our justice system to restore whatever loss and harm has been committed in the community. And so there are some fantastic restorative justice models that are out there that need to be implemented, and to really look at, is incarceration the best way to make the community and the individual whole again? Mm-hmm. And so that's the first thing. The other thing that we have to do, and this really fits in so neatly with Reality Sandwiches, we have to stop the drug war, because we have to deal with drugs vis-a-vis the public health system and not through the criminal justice system. And once we can get our heads around the fact that drugs are a public health crisis and not a crime problem, then we'll solve the over-incarceration problem, and we'll solve the public safety problem. We'll start stopping crime and preventing so many crimes that either occur because of the criminalization of drugs or occur as a consequence of people basically just being whacked out of their minds. So I think if we could address those two big issues, we'd fix a lot of the other problems that exist.
Yeah, my comrade is very, very specific. I think that for me to answer those questions, I'll have to be really broad-banded, you know. I think the first thing is, for me, the question of access to justice, so that all people have an equal amount of access to justice, because it seems that people who are poorer goes to prison easier because they do not have the means to hire lawyers, and they do not have even the means to understand the legal system, you know. Then a second thing that I have discovered, like working with the through here, is that there is not one single justice module for the whole of the U.S. Like in Vermont and in those places, they do a different thing than they do in California, you know. So there is no cohesive system. Like the punishment that I was talking about for marijuana in that area is like almost life, you know. Mm. And in this area, it's like maybe a person can get away if the cop just talk nicely and say, hey, smoke about around the bush, or, you know. Mm. Then also the question of the discretion of the judges, because it seems like there's a rigid form that's already presented to judges and say, hey, you got to follow this. Judges cannot listen to it and say, oh, man, I can kind of understand that this person may have a psychological problem and I need to refer him to that area. Or why. Then lastly, in fact, is that instead of having more people in prison, they can have those people who offend, they can look at community programs that involve them in the community, so that if instead of having six people in prison and one person on that parole scheme or whatever scheme, we can reverse it, you know, so that the person's chances of rehabilitating and integrating in the community is greater than when he's kept in the cage with all these ideas. Mm. The other thing that I want to say is that what I like about your program too is that it deals with the spiritual upliftment of the person. It deals with how each individual can improve himself, you know. So in prison, we need to get programs that focus on the individual, that makes people Tony Robinsons and make people Oprah Winfrey's and those kind of things. And because you know that information is available, but at this moment it's being exploited through the capitalist system. Mm. So people who want that kind of attention, they have to pay $500 and blah, blah, blah.
Right.
You know, if they can put those kind of prison programs in the prisons, and I'll be happy. You know?
Mm. What kinds of programs have you thought of? I'm sure you probably have. Types of things that can help actually get a prisoner back on his feet so that when they get back out into society, they can actually do something productive. You know, I saw this great movie doing Vipassana and how amazing that was to help the crime in the prisons. And any ideas of ways to help people learn or rehabilitate themselves that obviously aren't really happening now in the system that would be helpful?
Well, this is Vato again here at KPOO, Community-Based Radio. And like I said earlier, it's an overwhelming subject. And what you're asking now, what can be done program-wise? We could speculate on that forever, you know. And I think the organizations that exist today that deal with prisoner issues are foremost concerned about human rights. I mean, someone in prison is not safe today. Families are learning that across the country. There's atrocious things. Charles can tell you about just atrocious things that happen by way of just being in prison. But once again, there's not the resources, nor the money, nor the will on the part of the Department of Corrections to want programs, to want to rehabilitate. We're living in a punitive age. I understand the way I feel about it. Every day is a threat. And we're talking about why Vato does what he does. Is Vato, on the whole, doesn't have a whole lot of choices where I am today in my life. And once again, when they started the fight against me and led me off into captivity, let's say at age 11 to begin with, I stayed in that state of captivity most of my life through one means or another. And I would venture to say that America has tens of millions of ex-felons who live like myself as an underclass in society. And once again, when prisoners come out of prison, there's nothing for them out here. The program is to fail you. That's the program.
Why do they want to keep
because
people?
Because of who's in control all the way up from president to who the wardens are today in the prison system. Is that at one time the Department of Correction, like I said, had a care and treatment department. That was obliterated. The prisons were seized by the guard union 20 to 30 years ago. I remember when the guard unions first came in there. There was two of them. They were very small. Nobody paid a whole lot of attention. They weren't bossing the wardens around. They weren't telling anybody, administrators, what programs you could have or not. But gradually, power consumes itself. The guard union have consumed the program in prison, and the program in prison, the only program in prison, is custody. That's all there is. Custody, we feed you, we give you a blanket, we tell you where to lay down, and you keep your mouth shut because it's to their best interest not to have a strong inmate population. Doesn't that make sense? How do you keep a weak inmate population? Well, you keep them killing each other. For one thing, you can do that. The violence is diverted for you. Is that there's a lot of secret protocols that I'm not going to get into of the operations in prisons. Administrators got nothing to do with the running of prisons no more today. The wardens cannot go into the security house cell blocks without the permission of the strong guard union stewards.
Really?
Heck yeah.
who's in charge here, and like I said, is this about money, or what's...
Yeah, and I mean, I imagine that the average American still has this hallucination in their mind from 30, 40 years ago, you know, at least what I learned in elementary school, right, with the prison system was a part of our government, and there was, you know, rehabilitation going on, and all these different kind of things and illusions that we have in our mind about it. Yeah, because we like to distance ourselves from even knowing about it, generally speaking. But clearly there's been this significant denigration in the whole operation of the system, its purposes, its values, what it does, and also the privatization of it. We haven't even spoken about how that's fed into the deterioration.
Well, you have it absolutely correctly. But what I do, I cut right to the bone by saying we are living in a police state, And there's a prison state within the police state, and within all of them, there's also a military-industrial complex. It's all about business, the processing of surplus human life. Here in America, people of color, you know, people that can take them off the street and put you in a cell, and you're worth $50,000 to somebody. To who? You're worth that to the person who's going to sit on you and guard you. And he wants no interference from the wardens, from any of these liberals. And today, liberalism is a bad, a vile word within the prison industrial complex. You know, you got to be totally hardcore. Who is staffing the prisons today? They're bringing them home from Iraq. These people that have been trained to kill and military. That's who runs the prison. That's who, where 20 years ago, the prisons got staffed when they were building here in California by ex-military, and they took it over, and they imposed a martial law within the prison systems. And I'd like to tell your listening audience and our listening audience to wake up. We're living in a police state. That's what it's all about. It's profiting off of prisoners, profiting off of the downtrodden, the homeless, the people of color. You know, it's the ex-felons, you know, that are living in society. And so the struggle for me not only goes on because I want it to go on, because it's a matter of survival for a lot of us. Today, for me to hang on to my freedom, and I'm free today to be here on your show. I really want to thank you, appreciate it, you know, because I want to put my voice out there because I want it to be a strong voice for the imprisoned class, of which I, for one, have freed myself, very few in number. But there's some of us out there. There's a courageous group of ex-felons. They're called All or None. And Dorsey Nunn was on our show last week. We paid tribute and honor to our comrade Nate Nathaniel Harrington, who the organization is named after, All or None. And we ourselves in the black communities, the Latino communities, the Asian communities must ourselves, like myself, that have been through the experience, organize for self-defense against a government who has programmed us to fail and return to prisons. And what we're saying is that, no, we're going to help each other. We're going to build each other up. We're going to get each other jobs. And that's exactly what All or None is doing right now. So if we're talking about programs, they have to be programs that come from our families, from our communities, from our comrades, because the government has nothing for us. And at least Vato realizes that. Orale.
Let me offer just a bit to support what Bato said, because, you know, there's also another interesting overlap between reality sandwich and prisons, because most of the prisons in the state of California are built on what was more so and still is the agricultural base, the Central Valley. And so a lot of where the prisons are used to be farms and in fact are still farmlands. There's all of the prisons in the state. You walk across the street and there's a giant farm where they're growing either cotton or lettuce or strawberries or things of that sort. So they're really, to answer your question, Martin, how did we get here? You know, it's a convergence. It's not a conspiracy. And the convergence is a variety of very powerful political and economic forces in the state. And just to name off a few, one was the loss of that agricultural base in the state and the rise of agribusiness. And when the rise of agribusiness came into play, it destabilized a lot of communities that otherwise were small, comprised of small farms. And that created rampant unemployment in those communities. And as Bato pointed out, if you still want access into the American middle class in California, and you have a minimal education, like a high school diploma, one of the surest ways to do it is become a prison guard. And in many of these very small, rural, otherwise farming communities, the single largest employer is the California Department of Corrections and Rehabilitation. So the loss of that agricultural base did play in part into the prison system. And then obviously the rise of the prison guards union, the CCPOA, that became the single largest lobbying force in the state, that had a huge influence on it. And then on the political landscape, you had politicians over the last 30 or so years basically stepping over one another to be tough on crime, because they saw that as a very political, sexy issue for them, and they really lost no brownie points on it. And so on the political side, just changing the laws on the books and imposing these really long, ridiculously long sentences, that too created this problem. And then on top of it, you have this perverse incentive that the state has to impose this police state, because otherwise you have a huge class, particularly in the Latino community, which is the largest population now in the Department of Corrections. You have thousands and thousands of Latinos who would otherwise possibly pose a threat to the state in a very real and meaningful way, not only the immigrant community, but those people who are living here, quote unquote, legally. So it's really a convergence of political and economic powers and interests in the state that have created this largest prison system almost in the world here in California.
Mm. Now, is this in its entirety a U.S. challenge? Is California particularly egregious? And the additional part of that question is, are there any models out there, other states that are more humanistic in this approach to rehabilitation, other countries? I mean, where can we look for any sanity in this subject?
Well, you know, California is unique. We incarcerate a larger percentage of our overall population. I think it's 1 in 189 or something in that realm. So just in terms of sheer percentage of our population, yes, California is unusual because we love to incarcerate people in the state to a higher degree. And then we also just have, because of the population of the state, we have a larger number of people in prison. We have the second largest prison population in the world. America loves to imprison its communities. We pointed out last week that there are about 30-some-odd thousand people in prison in the whole of Canada, the entire country of Canada. There's about 30,000 people in prison, about 152,000 on parole. If you combine those two numbers, that's still less than the overall number of people that just California puts behind bars. So we have an epidemic here, and there's a reason why, you know, given the history of this country, the Jim Crow laws and et cetera, why we have that huge underclass of prisoners that Bato was referring to. In terms of other models, you know, not many countries get their prison systems right. There was that old adage about you can judge a society by how it judges its how it treats its prisoners. And unfortunately, not many societies, you know, some of the Scandinavian countries and Canada as well, although those systems too are imperfect, are better models of incarceration. But unfortunately, the trend in developed and certainly in developing countries is to continue to over-incarcerate and to abuse its prison population. China has a horrible record when it comes to prison rights and human rights, obviously. Brazil is another country that has a very severe and poor record on that point. Southeast Asia, countries like Burma, obviously. Vietnam has a horrible track record there. You know, there's unfortunately, there aren't the kinds of models that we need to see out there. And if they are, they don't last long enough because, I mean, we even see today here in California, Schwarzenegger and the Republicans are trying to trim the budget as we speak by cutting out funds for Prop 37, which is the drug diversion program. It basically says, hey, a person's a first-time drug offender, don't stick them in a prison, give them some drug and rehabilitation programs. Mm-hmm. And what is the state trying to do? When any kind of financial hardship comes out, the state is trying to cut that program when that has proven over and over again that it saves the state millions of dollars to provide that kind of treatment rather than to incarcerate somebody. So, you know, there are so many fantastic ideas. What we need is a revolution in terms of the public's involvement on mm-hmm. these issues, because the public, as Julie pointed out, you know, it's the out of sight and out of mind mentality. It's these invisible societies where, hey, if it's not affecting me, you know, I'm not going to care about it or I'm not going to know about it or be invested in it. We have to change that fundamentally. And that's not just for the prison system. That's for our public health system. That's for our, you know, our economic systems. The way that we interact with each other on a daily basis, where we just kind of blow each other off and in a very harsh manner, you know, we need to change the whole set of human relations. And mm-hmm. until that's done, the prison system is going to continue to plague us.
Mm. Wow.
I can't think of any prisons anywhere that I can think in my mind to lend praise to as far as doing it right. A lot of laws, a lot of things got to, you know, a lot of tolerances and a lot of other things have to change, you know. And I think here locally, though, is that, believe it or not, for a time I did work within the sheriff's department as a creative writing teacher out in San Bruno. And once again, for our listening audience, we had a commemoration a week back for Nathaniel Harrington. And right there at 8th and Bryan Street, At the Glamour Slammer, the new jail, there is a library called Nathaniel Harrington Library. And we asked people to go check out who Nathaniel Harrington was. Here was an ex-con who I think felt that, you know, we had to do it ourselves. And he became a lawyer and he started defending prisoners here in the county jail. And so, like I said, without lending too many praises, is that San Francisco is an island within the United States of progressive ideas for how to help people incarcerated, man, you know, get on their feet, get their self-confidence back, get on the road, get, you know, politicized, you know, go out there and march for something against the war or for human rights or for medical rights. Do something other than keep yourself involved with criminal activity, you know. And we got to, as people, veteranos like myself, old double OGs, ex-cons like myself, we got to pass that information on to the youngsters, man, because they're caught up in a world of chaos within this, the perimeters of Babylon here. And we know there's a lot of things crazy here at home, but we ourselves don't have to act crazy, be crazy. We get ourselves some support from people who have been there and back. And once again, we do appreciate you having us on your show, because a lot of things are combined. A lot of things are, you know, one in the circle of human rights and human understanding and support for, you know, the people that are downtrodden. So my heart goes out to all the people that are incarcerated, because, hey, I know what it's like, you know, but Vato can do it, you can do it. Pull yourself up, and you know what? Don't eat that stinking food, man. Tell Mama to send you something healthy.
Just in our last 2 minutes, what can people do? I actually have some nutrition friends that actually go into San Quentin and do nutrition consultation for prisoners, just so they can understand how food can really affect somebody's mood or depression or aggression. I thought that was really interesting and amazing that some of my colleagues wanted to do that. And then I've heard of other people wanting to do some of these meditation type programs. So either what can someone do directly or indirectly, or to support a cause or to write their congressperson? So, you know, to kind of end it on a positive note, what can people do right now?
I would say the easiest would be for individuals to follow a particular case. Like, for instance, the San Francisco 8. Follow that case, see what's happening, or look at the Cuban 5, for instance, and then follow it from there. Because a lot of people say, oh, man, in prison is a lot of murderers and criminals. And so if you don't want to concentrate on those people, look at a figure or a couple of figures and then follow them, research that, you know?
I would say, you know, you can be addressed on two levels. At an individual level, feed the mind, body, and spirit of a prisoner in whatever capacity, you know, whether it's teaching them meditation or acting as a mentor, helping with their education. There's an important role that people on the outside of those prison walls can have, and a big effect that they can make on a person who lives within those confines. So that's on an individual level, and I think if you're doing that individual work, then the broader connections need to be made, and the broader connections are what we could do at the kind of macro political level to change some of the policies that force people to live in those types of conditions. So, you know, and then educate yourself. We all have a responsibility to learn about the world around us, because it's a reflection of ourselves. And so I think, you know, perhaps those three things: educate yourself, educate other people, even if it's just about asking questions. You don't have to, you know, have some fantastic expertise on a topic. Just ask the seemingly simple questions, because you'll start to unravel the onion that is the prison system.
And it's on that very topic of education that we wanted to have you guys on here, and we appreciate your sharing your personal insights with us on the show today. And because our audience is the emerging conscious, people that are waking up and being more involved in their world and understanding the reality that this challenge is everyone's challenge. It is a part of what's going on in our society, and the innately human precepts of human rights and justice know no limits. No limits whatsoever.
Just one last bit of advice for anybody that is incarcerated. Vato can give you the best advice, is to hold your tongue for 10 seconds before you open it, because listen, inside prison, you'll get slammed right and left if you keep running your jaw when it's important to listen to what's going on, observe, take care of yourself, keep your mental energy up, and read, and stay up.
Mm. That's good advice for all of us.
And how can people support Prison Focus and support you all who are doing this wonderful work on the front end?
Well, if they want to get directly involved in Prison Focus, it's real simple. It's as Martin mentioned early, it's prisons, that's plural, O-R-G. And so you can certainly visit us on the web. We're in San Francisco. We've been around for nearly 20 years as a human rights organization, and we always need volunteers, especially folks to go to various prisons throughout mm-hmm. the state and sit down and meet with prisoners. So if you're interested in that. But you could also help us just by what we said before. You don't have to join Prison Focus as long as, you know, you're doing the work of justice. You're standing in solidarity with us. So just if there's something small or large in your community that can be done, go ahead, because, as I say, we stand in solidarity with that mm-hmm. as well. So thanks again for having us on the
Thank
program.
Thank you so much.
Thank you.
You are listening to KPOO San Francisco, 89.5 FM. You're listening to Reality Sandwich. Stay tuned every Thursday at noon. Thanks for listening. Tell me who can be against you. Bring not thyself up, evil doers. If Jah is for you, tell me who can be against you.